Winter doubles as eating season in Wisconsin. It's the perfect time for hearty soup and toasty bread and a cozy night at home. This hour, we'll talk do-it-yourself winter food and get ideas for everything from homemade cheese to, yep, wild boar. I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ian Knauer joins us today. He's a farm-to-table chef and a former Gourmet Magazine test kitchen cook. He's also the author of a cookbook called The Farm. And Ian Knauer, it's great to have you with us again.
So good to be back. I love this show.
Thank you. Well, it's fabulous. You escaped us last pledge drive, but this time we've ensnared you.
You got me caged up now.
So I guess from what I heard from my producer, Marika, we were trying to talk to you to set up the show to get these recipes picked, and we couldn't reach you for a while. And finally, she said, you know what? He was off wild boar hunting. Really?
That's right. I was out in the woods of Pennsylvania. I was, yeah. wild boar, they're a real problem when it comes to agriculture because they destroy crops and they breed like rabbits. So they're, you know, once one gets out of captivity, they just multiply.
That sounds so medieval. I didn't know that we had wild boars. Are we just talking about feral pigs, or is there a difference?
Well, okay, so they start as feral pigs. They start as pigs that usually escape captivity. But one of the really interesting and sort of strange things about pigs is that if they're living in a natural habitat, they revert back to the wild. They grow tusks again. They grow hair again. Yeah, so they turn into wild boars.
Really?
No kidding.
Now I feel like we should do the whole hour about wild boars, but that's not... Okay, well, that is something I didn't know. That's fascinating. So you've been cooking wild boar, I'm guessing, because you cook what you kill. I know that's the kind of guy you are. But aside from wild boar, what have you been cooking this winter?
Your typical winter stuff. So I tend to eat a lot of leafy greens in the winter, a lot of collards, a lot of kale, even Swiss chard just to mix it up a little bit. Potatoes, and squash. You know, I really love winter squash. And there's so many different winter squash now. It's not just butternut that you can find anymore. There's some. There's a pumpkin that I had recently called a Long Island cheese pumpkin.
Wow!
It does not taste like cheese.
Oh, that's too bad.
It tastes like pumpkin, which is not bad either. But it looks like a little round of cheese. It's like a squash little pumpkin. It is delicious. It's really sweet. It's even sweeter than butternut.
So where do you find this magical pumpkin?
Well, I found it at a farm stand near my house in Pennsylvania. Originally, as you can guess because of the name, it came from Long Island. But I think it's one of the varieties that you're seeing more and more now from small farmers just to sort of increase their variety at their farm stands.
Well, so soup is something that I could eat almost every single day in winter. Although I have to tell you, I'm kind of through my bag of soup trips already, and it's February. We've got a lot more winter to come. I've done my lentil, I've done my black bean, I've done my carrot. What other kinds of soup could I be cooking right now?
Well, I mean, you know, we're talking about squash, and squash really lends itself well to pureeing. Once it's cooked and pureed, it becomes almost silky. I mean, the texture of squash, or pumpkin for that matter, is sort of it's a really great way to get a wonderful texture out of soup that totally coats your mouth without having to add any fat. So you don't need to add cream or a ton of butter if you're pureeing pumpkin or butternut squash in a soup.
And you were kind enough to send us a bunch of recipes, and one of them was for this winter squash soup with quick pickled squash. Tell us about that one.
So this actually, the idea for this comes from the flavors that are used in Amish cooking, in Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. You have sweet, and in this case, the squash is sweet. And then you usually have sour. The Amish are famous for their pickles. You have this balance, essentially. And, I mean, every chef is trying to find that same balance, but this is sort of a very classic American thought. You know, you want to have each flavor receptor in every bite. So what I did here is I have this sweet/savory soup, and then I took some of the squash and I shaved it super thin on a slicer, and I did a little quick pickle. You know, it's almost like a bread and butter quick pickle. And the slices of squash sit there and they wilt a little bit in the pickling liquid. And then I use that as a garnish on the soup. And so you have like this sour, sweet, savory soup, and it's really, really delicious.
Yes, it sounds like it's got a lot of flavors going on there, like all
totally,
all of
yeah,
those
and it's sort of this yeah, it's this modern take on this really classic idea of getting all these great flavors in your mouth at once.
Now, is this one you made up yourself?
It is, yes.
Nice, yeah. It's got a lot of unusual things in it. The light brown sugar.
I can't remember what's in it.
You know what?
Oh, right. Brown sugar. So, yeah, so that adds the nice sweet element. It also gives you a little bit of that molassesiness. It's, you know, it's got more flavor than just white sugar.
I was going to say, I bet nothing is that unusual to you, is it?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been eating wild boar kidney for the last week, so.
Yeah, maybe not. Harder to get that from you. Well, I know that you're also a big bread guy, by which I mean that you love to bake bread, and you teach a bread baking class. You're totally unintimidated by it. So as someone who's at the opposite end of that spectrum, how did you learn to stop worrying and love the loaf?
Well, I used to be there, too. I think it's a really common phobia to be afraid of making bread. And I think that comes from the idea that has been hammered into us that you have to be, you know, exact. You have to be a scientist if you're a baker. That's actually not true. You have to understand the way that the dough is going to react to temperature and humidity, and you have to know what to look for. But once you learn those things, you can recognize them. You can actually look at the dough and touch the dough and know that it's going to need more flour or more water. So I learned to just, you know, relax about making bread from a French guy named Richard Bertinet. He's a baker. He's got a cooking school in Bath, England, and it's also a bakery. And he's making just the most incredible bread.
What do you like about his bread?
Well, this is what I like about it most. It's the best quality French bakery bread that you can find anywhere in the world. And here's the kicker. He makes it in a home oven, the same kind of oven that you or I have at home. So he doesn't have fancy equipment. He kneads it all by hand. And he teaches in his bread class, and he teaches you how to do this, how you can make the same style bread at home. And so that's what I've been doing. And that's what I teach at my class, too, is my version of his technique. The secret is adding a little more water than you're used to adding. So this is a wet dough. It's quite sticky. It's gluey almost. And when you're making it, if you're kneading it by hand, you're going to get dough everywhere. And that's just like – you just have to accept that, right? So a steak is going to have some blood in it, and this dough is going to be sticky. And that's just the way it is. And what happens as it bakes, that moisture essentially steams the bread as it's baking. Now, if you're baking it in a baker's oven, a conventional oven, they have little steam jets in there. And that moisture gives you that super crusty crust, which is one of the things that I really love about this kind of bread. So by adding extra liquid to the dough, making it a little stickier, you're essentially making your home oven into that very humid atmosphere. So you end up with this really amazing bread, and you can do it at home. And that's, once people realize that they can do that, it changes your world.
I can see that it would change your world. I feel like if
I
were to
tell, I'm very passionate about it, right?
I can. I want my world to be changed by bread.
Right.
I'm still scared of it, though, because mine come out like little hockey pucks.
Right. Well, this is going to help with that. Adding more liquid is going to help, and also kneading it a certain way is going to help. Instead of just kneading it the way that we're used to kneading it with the heel of your hand, this bread you can't do that with. This dough you can't do that with because it's so sticky. You have to sort of stick your fingers under it and pick it up and slap it down and spank it around a little bit. And what you're doing is you're adding air, you know, and you're also activating those glutens, which is what gives it that really great texture on the inside.
And this is another one of the recipes that you sent us, by the way, as we talk this hour with Ian Knauer, who is a farm-to-table chef and a former Gourmet Magazine Test Kitchen cook. He's the author of a cookbook called The Farm. Now, we've been enjoying this conversation with Ian Knauer and learning about his favorite winter recipes, and we'll get back to that conversation. But first, we need to take a few minutes to ask for your support of the programs that you enjoy. Listeners help pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio, and here we are in our winter membership drive. Steve Paulson is with me, and we're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs you count on.
Last hour, the goal was 35 pledges, and we heard from 21 listeners. Thank you very much for those pledges. Well, guess what? We have a new goal this hour. The goal is 40 pledges. Help us meet this goal by making a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your gift.
And I just want to get this out there right away, because this hour we have a special incentive. We're sweetening the pot a little for you as you consider that pledge. At a pledge of any amount this hour, you will get that exclusive collection of recipes that we're talking about this hour, the bread, the soup, and there's more to come. There's cheese, there's even wild boar from Chef Ian Knauer when you give any amount. So again, we'll send you a beautiful packet of these recipes, or we can also email it to you as well, which is an easy way to do it, for a pledge of any amount. So ask for that now when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And of course, you're making that pledge not just to get the recipes, although that's not a bad reason to make the pledge, but you are doing that to support the kind of programming that you hear every Friday on Veronica's program, not to mention on all the other things that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. I mean, think about all the arts, the culture, the quirky stories that you don't get anywhere else. Food, travel, books, the environment, music, all of that comes every Friday on Veronica's show. This is your time to step forward and to say, yeah, I like that. I will help support that kind of program. And you can do that. You can make a pledge right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Now, you probably heard the phrase think big before, and it's an expression that you can really put into practice by listening to and then giving to Wisconsin Public Radio. Because when you listen, you get the best music, the best talk, the best news. And what that does is it really encourages you to think big. Literally, you have the ideas, your mind is chock full of these things just swimming around in there, and you have the materials, the mental stuff to think big.
When you donate to keep that high quality music and talk and news available to you and to your community, your gift of any amount is added to the gifts of everyone else to make big things happen on WPR. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we hope that the programs that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio make a difference in your life. We're pretty confident that they do, because if you're listening right now during a pledge drive, it's a good bet that you listen every day and you're a diehard listener. So during our winter membership drive, we're asking you to make a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Your gift of whatever amount you choose, whether it's $25, $60, $120, makes a difference in what you hear and look forward to every day. That's because we rely on your gift more than any other form of support. So make a difference right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
More than 8,000 individuals and families are sustaining members of Wisconsin Public Radio. Setting up a monthly gift to WPR is simple, but your sustaining membership is a big deal. Your generosity benefits everyone who listens to WPR. That's more than 200,000 people every day. On behalf of those listeners and the staff of WPR, thank you.
Make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Veronica Rickert with Steve Paulson, and we're here asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And remember, this hour only, a pledge of any amount, and we will send you a thank you gift of Ian Knauer's favorite winter recipes. We've got bread in there, which we've been talking about already, the secret recipe for Ian's bread. We have got a Moroccan vegetable tagine in this packet, and his very popular, I know peaches aren't in season, but you got to look forward to spring, right? So there's the recipe for his magic peach cobbler tucked away in there too, because everybody loved that so much when we talked about that before. Yes, wild boar, if you're feeling adventurous, is in there as well, and homemade ricotta. So just a sampling of some of these four-star recipes from Ian Knauer when you make your gift of any amount this hour at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, just hearing you describe these recipes, I'm wondering if you can somehow get satisfied just by talking about the food. Do you always have to eat it? I don't know. It's
kind or are of... you just tormented? I don't know.
Right, exactly. Now, if you already renew by mail or make ongoing monthly transfers from your bank account, thank you very much. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
And if you haven't given yet, join thousands of your friends and neighbors and other wonderful WPR members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What does making a pledge mean? A pledge is a promise. We pledge to bring you great shows every day. You pledge to support them with a contribution in any amount.
When you help to pay for the cost of this station, we'll make sure that there's something interesting for you to listen to. That is our promise to you. And it's our pledge. So now make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a goal this hour of 40 pledges. We've heard from four of you so far. Thank you for those pledges. Actually, five we've heard. But we have a long way to go. 35 more pledges to reach our goal, and we have just over 35 minutes to do that. Your gift right now would be wonderful. You can make that contribution at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And again, pledge of any amount will send you this collection of Ian's favorite winter recipes this hour at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for your support. I'm Veronica Rickert. And if you'd like to call in and ask your food questions, get some fresh inspiration for ingredients from Ian, you can give us a ring at 1-800-642-1234. That's the call-in number, 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Ian Knauer, who's a farm-to-table chef and a former Gourmet Magazine Test Kitchen cook. He blogs at ianknauer.com. And we're talking about favorite winter recipes because, you know, winter really is a time where it's great to just hunker down and cook and maybe eat a beautiful meal in front of the fire. And, you know, Ian, as you're probably well aware, Wisconsin is the cheese state. And even so, I think most of us don't make our own cheese. We probably buy it. That's definitely what I do. But you have a recipe here. You like to do it yourself. You've got a recipe for homemade ricotta. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm sort of with you on the buying fancy cheeses idea because you just want to leave that to the experts. But some cheeses are so easy to make, and ricotta is one of those cheeses. You wouldn't believe it. It's so easy. And all you do is you bring some whole milk, a little bit of cream up to a simmer, add some salt, and then dump about 3 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice in there. And what happens as it simmers, as it continues to simmer for a minute or two, it curdles. The acid in the lemon juice makes the milk curdle. And you might think that that's going to ruin it, but that's exactly what you want to happen because when that happens, the curds and the whey separate. And the curds in this case are the ricotta. All you do is you strain that through some cheesecloth and you've got your fresh ricotta. And this stuff is so much better than the stuff that you buy at the store. I mean, it's like heads and shoulders better. And I put it in omelets. I put it in my oatmeal. I dollop it on my pizza. I drizzle honey over it with, you know, some fresh citrus for breakfast. I mean, it's really, really good stuff. And it's so simple.
Okay, you're kind of selling me on this ricotta thing.
You should try it. Go home and try it. I mean, you'll be impressed with yourself that you make something so good and it's so easy.
Well, ricotta isn't my favorite cheese, but, you know, I'm looking at this picture and it looks amazing. Can you describe the taste? Like, what is the difference if I go to the store and buy a bucket of, you know, already made ricotta versus this homemade stuff?
First of all, if you get the stuff at the store, they tend to use either whole milk or skim milk, which is fine. But if you add just a little bit of cream in there, which is what I do in my recipe, you get a much richer texture. It's creamy. In fact, it's almost like billowy. Like, this is like cheese clouds. That's what it tastes like in your mouth. No, I'm serious. It's so good. And it's creamy. You know what? The little bit of salt that's in there helps the flavors of the milk come through. So if you can get your hands on some raw milk, use it to make fresh ricotta because you really, really taste that flavor.
Okay, you had me at cheese clouds. Cheese, I have to tell you, is my favorite food. So if we're talking clouds of cheese, I'm there.
Yeah, you're all in.
I'll totally try that. That looks fantastic. And we're going to get to your wild boar. But first, I want to talk about, you know, veggies, because we'll do the meat later. But there's a recipe you sent us for a Moroccan vegetable tagine. I think that's how you pronounce it, right?
Yes. Yeah. So this is a vegetable stew. And the reason that I wrote this recipe is because one of my sisters is a vegetarian. And I love to have her over for dinner, but, you know, I can't serve her wild boar. And it's winter, and so I want to serve her something really satisfying and comforting and delicious and warming. And usually that means like braised meat for me. But there's no reason why you can't make vegetables just as satisfying and just as comforting in the winter. So this stew uses some butternut squash and a can of tomatoes and some collard greens. And the secret to making it so sort of wintry is by adding these Moroccan spices. So there's cinnamon stick in there, and there's some coriander and cumin. And they're really warm spices. And they really fill out the flavor there and make it, you know, really a perfect stew to eat in front of the fire, like you mentioned before.
And you say that nobody does vegetable stew better than the Moroccans. How come?
Well, that's the truth. They, you know, going back to that balance thing, the typical Moroccan tagines that are vegetarian, they have enough different vegetables in there that you get a sweet vegetable. In this case, it's the butternut squash. You get an acidic vegetable. In this case, it's the canned tomatoes. You get something leafy, you know, and it really rounds it out. It helps bring all those flavors together in a way that no single vegetable can do on its own.
So it's just this full-bodied, really deep, spicy mixture.
Exactly. Perfect for cold winter days.
Yeah. Is it hard to make? A lot of chopping,
no.
That kind of thing?
No. I throw in huge chunks of this butternut squash. These are like 3-inch pieces. That also like gives you sort of this like satisfying meatiness. You know, you get a big chunk of vegetable in your bowl, and it gets so soft that you could just cut it with a spoon.
Wow. Well, that sounds pretty fantastic. I've never made that one before, but it, you know, it's always been a little scary to me again because – and I'm not like a chicken cook. I'm pretty adventurous with what I cook. But for some reason, when you get into ethnic foods and sort of flavor profiles that I'm not aware of, and I don't really know what it's supposed to taste like, it's intimidating.
Yeah, well, we'll take the guesswork out of that. Just follow this recipe, and you will be over that in no time.
Okay, I'll eat it after my cheese clouds.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Margaret, who's joining us from Rockbridge. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
I was wondering, what are the herbs that are essential to plant in the garden, and also the recommended processing for them?
Okay, Ian, did you hear that?
Herbs, which herbs are essential to plant in the garden, and then how to process them?
Right.
Right? Okay. So I've had terrific luck with dill. I love dill, and there's a variety of dill. I think it's called Long Island Mammoth or something like that. And it turns into a pine tree. I mean, this stuff thinks that it's a whole forest. If it gets enough water and enough sun, these plants are like 3 feet tall, and they're these beautiful like ferns that sway in the breeze. You'll never run out of dill again. To process them, there are a couple different things to do, specifically with the dill. One, you could cut it and hang it upside down and dry it. Dried dill is a wonderful flavor. It's different than fresh dill. And secondly, something that I like to do with herbs in general is to chop them very finely, put them in ice cube trays, and then cover them with just enough water to cover them. And then when you want to cook with them, you just take one of those ice cubes and you throw it in your soup or you throw it in your stew or whatever you're making. And as that water melts, it's not much water. It's a tablespoon of water, so okay. It won't change your recipe. You really get the essence of those herbs in a different way than dried. And you're able to sort of preserve that fresh flavor.
So can you do that with any herb?
I do it with all my herbs, with the one exception of rosemary. It doesn't work so well with rosemary. The rosemary sort of turns black when it freezes. So with rosemary, I just dry it.
So let me ask you about rosemary, because I adored the flavor of rosemary. And the only thing I don't like is the texture. It's so stocky, you know, that is there a way to cook with rosemary where it's not quite as coarse a presence in your food?
Absolutely. One of the beauties of rosemary is just how aromatic it is. the thing that I like to do, if I don't want, you know, little leaves of rosemary everywhere, and you're right, they're a little chewy, I tend to just take the whole sprig of rosemary, stick it in whatever I'm cooking, and then take it out when I'm done.
Okay.
Sort of like if you want, you could wrap it in cheesecloth with some bay leaves, and that way you just take the whole package out and you toss it, and all those flavors get infused in without having the chewy green bits.
Wow. So it just kind of permeates the food without getting those little leaves in there.
Exactly. I mean, it's the essential oils in the rosemary that you really taste and you really smell. And if you're cooking them, if you're boiling it, those oils get sucked into whatever you're cooking.
So you said you were a big fan of dill. So if you were stuck on a desert island and you could only cook with one herb for the rest of your life, would it be dill?
that's a very strange question.
I like to ask the hard questions, Ian.
Yeah, that is a hard question. You know, I am a big fan of dill, but I don't think that would be my choice if I could only choose one for the rest of my life.
Huh.
I think it would probably be parsley.
Parsley?
Because parsley is so versatile. You can make a parsley salad with the leaves. Parsley soup is amazing. It's good dried. It's good fresh. It's good minced. It's good coarsely chopped. And it's so pretty. You know, it can make any dish look prettier instantly.
Wow. Now you shocked me with the parsley thing, because I think of parsley. Often if I see parsley in a recipe, I'll think, I don't have to use the parsley, and I won't, because I just think it doesn't usually add that much in terms of flavor. But you're saying not so fast.
I think it's really flavorful. In fact, one of my favorite little kitchen treats as I'm cooking is to take the stem of the parsley and just chew on that. You get a milder parsley flavor, and it's a little watery. And another fun trick about parsley is that if you're a little worried that you might have bad breath for some reason, chew on some parsley. I'm serious. It'll get rid of anything, any garlic or whatever that you might have on your breath.
But then you have parsley breath.
No. That's okay. It's better than anything else.
All right. I'll think about that. We are talking this hour with Ian Knauer, who is a farm-to-table chef and the author of a cookbook called The Farm. And he's blogging now at ianknauer.com. And I'm here in the studio with Steve Paulson. And it is our winter membership drive. And we're asking you to think about how much all the programs that you listen to throughout the year are worth to you, and then to make a financial contribution in return at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 23 more pledges in the next 35 minutes. Thank you very much if you've already given. If you have not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might have found yourself hovering around the radio, drawn into a discussion you just couldn't leave, and maybe you needed to be somewhere, but that discussion was pretty interesting, and you just couldn't tear yourself away because you appreciated the guest's knowledge and wisdom and also the caller's questions and viewpoints. Because that's happened to you, because you know exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about that. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just in case you need a special incentive to make that pledge, you can choose to receive an exclusive collection of recipes from the kitchen of Chef Ian Knauer as your thank you gift for your pledge of any amount. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you will enjoy these recipes. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I want to tell you, these aren't just, you know, a handful of quickly scratched up recipes. There are some beautiful pictures, mouthwatering pictures, as Steve and I can attest to, with each recipe, and also Ian's thoughts about, you know, what makes that recipe special and a little background. So you really get, you know, a little cultural context about why these recipes taste so good and how Ian learned them and why they matter to him. So it's a beautiful thing to have. And you know what? We haven't even gotten to the wild boar and the magic peach cobbler yet. So we're going to be talking about those before the hour is up. But we'll send that as a thank you gift for your pledge of any amount this hour only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, we've been talking about listening to the preparation of food here. And think about what you get on Wisconsin Public Radio. It is the result of thoughtful preparation. We do our homework so that you get the highest quality radio programs. Thank you for your commitment to this quality, the commitment that you make when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, some people like to stock up on stuff for the future. They like to fill up their pantries. Well, imagine having an infinite supply of in-depth news, intelligent talk, and entertainment at your disposal whenever you want it.
A sustaining membership to Wisconsin Public Radio does just that. Your ongoing support is efficient and extends the shelf life of all of your favorite programs. Become a sustainer now with a gift of $10 or $20 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My life would be diminished without Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, I wouldn't want to do without it. I mean, from my lay point of view, it's beholden to no one. And it has people working for it who love radio and love what they're doing and love who they work for. You hope that people's character says, this is valuable to me, I need to support it.
Pretty well said. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm here with Steve Paulson, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So we do want to thank you in advance for that gift to WPR, a gift of maybe $5, maybe $10, maybe $30 a month, maybe $100 feels right to you. But whatever amount you decide is the right amount. That's the beauty of it. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have 20 minutes left in the hour, and we are still looking for 20 more pledges. We've already heard from 20 of you. Wonderful. Thank you very much. 20 more is our goal. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs that you count on all year long. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you have not, this is the time to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, you can ask to receive that exclusive collection of recipes that Ian Knauer has sent us. He's our guest this hour, farm-to-table chef and apparently wild boar hunter, and some beautiful, beautiful recipes in here for you, including this crusty bread that we talked about, homemade ricotta cheese. There is a Moroccan vegetable tagine in there as well. There is a wild boar recipe. There is magic peach cobbler, which people just loved last time around when we talked about it. It's a good excuse to get excited about spring and summer produce. Anyway, that will be yours with your pledge of any amount this hour at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So where do you get wild boar? That's my question.
You have to hunt it, Steve.
Yeah, where do you go to get that? I don't know. Now, you might feel like WPR is worth $1 million, but you don't have that much to give. Well, don't worry. Your gift of any amount, whether it's $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount is comfortable for you, is the right amount to give. The important thing is to make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ooh, and I forgot to mention that cool soup that Ian talked about with the squash and the pickles. That's also in the packet today if you make a pledge. And we are looking for 15 more pledges in about the next 20 minutes. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 supports the programs you count on. And it's the last weekday, by the way, of our winter membership drive, the last chance this drive to pledge for this show, and the drive ends tomorrow. So get that pledge in. Feel good about things as you go into the weekend. Thank you if you've already given, but if you haven't, we'd like to hear from you now.
And ask for the collection of these exclusive recipes from Chef Ian Knauer with your pledge of any amount to WPR. So pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, why not consider becoming a sustainer? Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. Lots of people are really loving this option and choosing to go this route. It's easy to set up, and it's a great way to make a lasting impact to Wisconsin Public Radio. You choose how to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So donate now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm talking this hour with Ian Knauer, a farm-to-table chef, boar hunter, beekeeper, forager, all that stuff, and a former Gourmet Magazine test kitchen cook. And he's the author of the cookbook called the farm. And Ian, I think we've tantalized people long enough with this wild boar story.
By the way, that's quite a bio that you read. I'm just a guy who likes to eat. That's all.
That doesn't sound impressive if I say Ian Knauer, guy who likes to eat.
Guy
right?
who likes to eat.
That could be a lot of guys, though, right? So tell me, Steve asked the question. He raised the good question. You know, if you're not hunting wild boar as you were, how do you get wild boar?
Well, you can get it from some butchers. If you have a butcher that you really like, go and talk to the butcher and see if he can order it for you. The taste of wild boar is different than pork that you buy that's been raised on a farm. It's a little, well, as you might guess, a little gamier.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be a little darker because these pigs are foraging for their food instead of eating grain or whatever the farmer is feeding them. But if you can't get your hands on wild boar, the recipe that's in this packet is still delicious with a pork tenderloin that you buy at the store.
Okay, so you can sub out the boar.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, well, tell me how this recipe goes down.
So the tenderloin is sort of a hunter's prize. It's really tender, obviously. That's why it's called that. It's a small cut. On this boar that I went hunting for, it fed two people. The tenderloins that you buy at the store usually feed three to four. And it's really quick to cook. You know, it only takes a couple minutes. So you don't have to labor in the kitchen very long after you've been hunting all day. You can just throw it in a pan and it's done in just a matter of minutes. So this particular recipe, I seared it in a pan. And I also roasted some fennel and some carrots in the oven. And when they're nice and tender and brown, I took them out. I sliced the boar. I put it on top. And then I made a really quick sauce in the pan that the boar roasted in. So I roasted it in a skillet. What you get when you do that, whether it's with wild boar or any meat, you get the drippings. You get the juices from the meat. And they caramelize a little bit on the bottom of the pan. They get nice and brown. And that has a ton of flavor. So you want to take advantage of that. You don't want to throw that out. Easy way to do that, I throw a little diced shallot, or you could use onion, in the skillet with whatever fat's in there. Saute it for just a minute, and then pour in some red wine and a little bit of red currant jelly, and let that cook until the jelly dissolves and it cooks down a little bit, and it becomes a glaze. And that's it. You know, it's a super simple pan sauce. You're taking advantage of all the flavors of the meat that roasted in the skillet, and you've got some nice acid to help balance those roasted vegetables, which are really savory.
I gotta say, that sounds pretty good.
It's pretty good.
And I would not have thought that.
You should try it.
I don't eat a lot of red meat. How would it taste if you sub tofu?
Well, it would taste different, but it would still be good.
It would still be good.
Yeah, I really like tofu.
Do you?
I do, yeah. I'm not a vegetarian, but I do really love vegetarian food sometimes. You know, it can be really satisfying.
So can I ask you again about this wild boar hunting? I'm going to be obsessing about this over the weekend if I don't ask. So in the movies, when people go wild boar hunting, the boars come charging out and they have really sharp tusks and they can impale you on them, these tusks, and you can die. Is it like that?
It is exactly like that.
It is
like
that?
As a matter of fact, it is totally like that, yeah. It's actually quite dangerous because these are wild animals. They have tusks, which are sharp, and they don't want to see you in the woods trying to kill them, you know? So they tend to be skittish, number one, like any wild animal. So they'll run away from you. But if they're wounded or if they're scared or in a corner, you know, you have to be careful. So you definitely – if you've never gone wild boar hunting and you want to go, find someone who has and go with them first just so they can show you the ropes.
So you need to take some precautions, right?
Yeah. I mean, hunting in general can be quite dangerous. So I think you need to be careful. You need to be aware. That's a good general rule if you're a hunter.
Wow, that is interesting. And especially the part, if you missed it from earlier, where you said feral pigs get hairy and grow tusks when they're not domesticated.
Isn't that the craziest thing?
It is the craziest thing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine by what Darwinian mechanism that happens, you know?
Well, you know, it's probably a protection. You know, their bodies realize that they might need their tusks. They'll get cold in the winter, so they grow hair, you know, and they just don't need it when they're kept inside.
That is strange. I'm going to be telling a lot of people that this weekend, and no one's going to believe me. So there you have it. If you want to make that wild boar recipe, you can go for that. Or Ian says you can sub out pork loin, I think you said, right?
Pork tenderloin, yes.
Pork tenderloin. Okay. So it's not really the growing season. It's winter. It's still a great cooking season, but we don't have peaches right now. But we wanted to throw this in here. My producer, Marika, said we have to include the peach cobbler because people are nuts about the peach cobbler, which is a summer food, obviously. But tell us about this peach cobbler. Magic.
So this is my magic peach cobbler. This is my one of my grandmother's recipes. And I love it because it's so whimsical. I mean, she called it magic peach cobbler. And the reason she called it that is because you don't actually do much work. You take the pan that you're going to bake your cobbler in, you put it in the oven with the butter, and the butter melts in the pan. And then you just leave the butter in the pan, and you whisk together the rest of your batter ingredients, your flour, your leavening, your milk, and egg, I think. You throw that, and then you pour that right over the melted butter. You don't mix it together like you would, a cake or anything else. And then you take your peaches, slices of peach, and you just put them right on top of that batter that's sitting in the melted butter in the pan. And it seems like it's just not going to work at all. You throw that back in the oven. It bakes. And what happens is the batter sucks up the butter and gets crispy on the edges and puffs up around that fruit, and the fruit sort of like sinks down into the batter, and you take it out of the oven and you just can't believe that it looks and tastes as good as it is. It's magic, because you didn't do any work. You just threw a bunch of stuff in the pan.
Oh, wow.
You're right. We are not in peach season, but if you have frozen peaches, they work well in this. If you have canned peaches, you can use them in this. You can also use other fruit. So if you have apricots, I mean, we're not in apricot season either, but we're coming up on rhubarb season.
Oh, right.
Take
well,
some
maybe
rhubarb,
where
chop.
You are.
Yeah, well, we're getting closer. We're not quite there yet. But, that's sort of one of the first, it's actually a vegetable, but the first dessert items that pops up in the garden. So you take some rhubarb, chop it into chunks, toss it with a little bit of sugar because rhubarb is quite tart. And then instead of dolloping the peaches on top, just sort of sprinkle the rhubarb on top. And you'll end up with a really awesome rhubarb, magic rhubarb cobbler.
Oh, that does sound amazing. You know, I haven't made this one yet. I don't know why. I didn't cook everything I wanted. I still think it was because it was like 102 every single day last summer.
But yeah, right. You don't want to turn the oven on.
I didn't, actually. I still remember the day I made your potato salad and I about melted into a puddle. But
yeah.
It was delicious. It was super delicious.
Well, it's cold now.
Right. It's snowing. I'm looking at snow right now. So it's fun to think about, summer food again, too. But I'm still into my soup mode and I'm excited to try a lot of these recipes. So, we're running out of time with you, Ian. Is there one more thing that we should try making this winter that you just love?
Oh, well, I have wild boar on my mind. So, I tried this a couple weeks ago. I made my own bacon for the first time.
How does that work?
Really simple. It's really simple. There are a couple different ways to do it. The way that I chose was to avoid adding chemicals. So you do want to add some preservative, and you can go to the store and you can buy this stuff called pink salt. It's nitrates, and they act to, one, make sure that the bacon stays nice and pink, and two, make sure that no bacteria gets in, no nasty bugs get in there. But like I said, I don't really love adding chemicals to my food, but I don't have to. Mm-hmm. And so I did some research, and I found out that nitrates actually come from vegetables mostly. And one of the vegetables that has the highest concentration of them is celery. And if you juice a head of celery and take the celery juice, you can use that as your brine for your bacon. And it will prevent it from, getting any bacteria in it that might make you sick while it's smoking. Because
wow.
The temperature comes up and you want to, that's the point where it could get a little dangerous. That's why you add the nitrates, but you can add a natural nitrate. And so I used celery juice. So I brined my pork belly, about 2-pound piece of pork belly, and a cup of celery juice and some water where I had dissolved about half a cup of sugar and a quarter cup of brown sugar.
Mm.
I'm sorry, half a cup of salt and a quarter cup of brown sugar. I let that brine for about 3 days. And then I took it out, I dried it off, and I started a charcoal fire in my grill. I let it burn down to embers. And then I took a couple pieces of hickory that I had soaked in water, and I just placed them on the embers, and they started to smoke. I covered that. I smoked it for 3 hours, and that's bacon. You chill it, and the next morning I had bacon for breakfast. It was delicious. And you know what? I was worried that it might taste like celery, but
yeah.
It didn't taste like celery. It tasted like bacon, which, of course, is Much better tasting.
Nothing wrong with that, yeah. And by the way, we are going to post that do-it-yourself bacon recipe on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. And Ian, we're out of time, but it was so great to talk to you again. I missed you.
Oh, I love talking with you, Veronica.
This was fun. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to dig into these recipes. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Ian Knauer is a farm-to-table chef, a former Gourmet magazine test kitchen cook, and he's the author of a cookbook called The Farm. He also blogs at ianknauer.com. And I'm Veronica Rickert with Steve Paulson, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. We're here today to raise money, the money that we need to pay for the programs you enjoy, programs like this one. That's how WPR works. The people who use it are the people who help pay for it. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to support the programs you count on.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs that you enjoy so much. And we have good news. We have reached our goal for the hour. The goal was 40 pledges. We've heard from 47 people already. Now, I should say that we did fall a bit short during the last hour, so this is your chance to make up for that. So we've got 5 more minutes, and this is your very last chance to call in or to make a pledge online specifically for Veronica's program. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you. I'm here with Steve Paulson during our winter membership drive, where we ask you to support the programs that you count on in the form of a gift. And you get to decide what amount is the right amount for you. The important thing is to make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a special incentive when you make a pledge during this hour, we've been listening to Ian Knauer's incredible winter recipes, you can get some of these when you make a pledge of any amount. And it takes only a few minutes of your time to make that pledge. So do it now. Just a few minutes left in the hour. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can get this packet of recipes either sent to you via email or we can send it in the mail. Either way, it's beautiful. There's pictures here, really gorgeous photographs of the food we're talking about and Ian's thoughts about them, some backdrop on why they're here. And, of course, the recipes themselves, the peach cobbler, the wild boar or pork tenderloin, the Moroccan tagine, the winter squash soup and the bread. So a lot to keep you going with your cooking this winter. And we'll give that to you as our thank you with your pledge of any amount this hour only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I'd like to make a special pitch to you to show your support for what Veronica Rickert does every week. I mean, she does something special here. You know it from the conversations that we've just had this morning with Richard Davidson talking about some of the most interesting things happening in the world of neuroscience and how it applies to our daily lives. And then sort of the joys of food. And Veronica does this week after week. Great guests, big ideas. She makes it fun. And it's great radio. You know that. You wouldn't be listening otherwise. So this is your time to step forward to say, yeah, I really value that. I'm so glad that Veronica is on the radio and I will help support it. And you can do that by making a pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes of your time, and in return, you get so much back. So maybe consider a donation of $100 a month.
Your $1,200 contribution helps us bring you the talk, news, music, and entertainment that you count on from WPR and helps make sure that our community and our state get the public radio that we all want.
And we have met our goal of 40 pledges, which is fantastic. But I can't tell you enough how cool these recipes are. So if you do want to pledge this hour, if you're thinking of pledging, why not pledge this hour? And we can send you this fabulous packet of Ian Knauer's recipes and get you cooking for, the next couple months through the winter there. Your pledge of any amount, and we'll be happy to send you that thank you gift of recipes at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we don't have much time left to ask for your support. This is it. This is sort of the last chance to show your support specifically for Veronica's program. So make that pledge of any amount, $60 pledge, a $120 pledge, a $500 pledge. This is the time to do it right now, and you can make the pledge online at WPR.org or by picking up the phone and making that call, 888-202-2552.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we really do appreciate each and every pledge. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this morning's programs and to Rhonda Fanning for technical direction. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and thank you